This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline was supposed to be finished this year, but protests and bureaucratic hurdles have delayed construction of the natural gas pipeline. Governor Cooper came under fire over the pipeline in an investigation requested by the Republican-led General Assembly. They were concerned that the governor used political influence in the permitting process. He required the pipeline companies to provide a $57 million environmental mitigation fund. Dan Kane joins us now. He's a member of the News and Observer investigative team. He looked into this. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Good to have you. So talk about this, what we're looking at here. What was it that the Republicans said the governor did?
Well, they're concerned about basically three things being intertwined. One being this permit for the pipeline. The other being this mitigation fund, which was actually didn't have a very clear definition when it was first announced. And then the third thing was the settlement of a battle between, you know, solar companies and Duke over basically access to the grid to be able to sell power to Duke. And there was some legislation earlier that year in 2017 that basically kind of weakened their position. And so all these things get intertwined in the correspondence and the back and forth between like Duke and the governor's office and even, you know, some folks in the solar business. And that got Republicans concerned because they started to get the sense that, well, basically, you know, a permit that should be just decided on its own merits might be held up because, you know, the concern about the need for this environmental mitigation fund and the need to settle this solar dispute. And so that's really where their focus came in. And I think what really bothered them is when the fund was announced, there wasn't really a clear definition. There were like three categories that would go towards environmental mitigation, economic development, I think basically trying to help communities hook into this pipeline as it's coming through North Carolina. And then the third thing was to try to also kind of boost sort of these alternative energy uses and yeah, you can see this is sort of a situation where the governor is kind of realizing like here's this pipeline coming in. It's not going to make the environmental community happy. You know, he's working on some things to try to maybe.
Yeah, maybe mollify that.
Maybe
community.
Mollify.
So a little quid pro quo, as we're fond of saying. But the idea it's a little bit of a mollifying effect. Okay, what if we got this mitigation fund? Would you feel better about this pipeline in your backyard?
And the other thing too is that other states had negotiated, you know, mitigation environmental mitigation funds, West Virginia and Virginia, and you can imagine how it would sound if you know this pipeline goes through in North Carolina and there's no similar right. amount of money, you know, to try to deal with whatever those issues may be here. So, you know, that's what really kind of got things started. And then, you know, being, you know, Democratic governor, Republican legislature, you know, clearly some distrust there, you know, with either side about, you know, what's this really about? You know, is it about a real problem or is this just politics? And so things kind of moved slowly as a result. And but finally, we did end up with this, you know, this report by three, you know, former federal investigators who now have their own business. And they looked at a lot of the correspondence and tried to talk to individuals and came up with a conclusion that they believe there was some improper actions on the part of the governor and his staff. Linking these things together,
yeah.
You know, such as basically saying, you know, I think their concern was that, you know, there was evidence there that, you know, that they wanted a solar deal before the permit would come through, that they wanted, you know, $57.8 million. You know, at one point they were talking $55 million, and then it looks like, well, Virginia, I think, had $57.8 million. So then it becomes like, well, can you make it $57.8 million?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these things that suggest that there was just this improper relationship between these three things.
All right. And again, but this could be a kind of a political, you know, the idea that you would be helping to mollify critics by saying, look, I'll give you this if we can get that.
Yeah, the question is whether you can do that with a water permit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're basically supposed to decide it on the merits of the water permit, then these other things really shouldn't be a part of that. And the governor and Duke Energy, you know, they have both said they weren't. You know, this was all handled, mm-hmm. you know, independently But what makes it difficult for them is in this correspondence, emails, text messages. You see all three things being discussed together.
Right. So that doesn't look right. So what happens next now? There's this investigation. Now there's a report. There's a suggestion that this is not the way public business should be conducted. What happens next?
One thing I did want to say is that investigation did not find that the governor personally profited from any of this. I just want to get that out there.
Because there were questions about family connections in the solar businesses, right?
That's right.
And they said the governor personally didn't profit or his family.
They did not find that.
All right.
So what's next is obviously the legislature will digest this report. They may take some kind of action when they come back in January. Is there a possibility that federal authorities will come in and take a look at this and go places that these private investigators couldn't go? They couldn't issue subpoenas. They couldn't basically interview people with the potential penalty of like lying to an FBI agent, that sort of thing. So we haven't heard anything about whether that's happened yet, but obviously that when you have a situation where you have this report and it makes these allegations and it raises these questions that probably, federal authorities would be, best able to kind of, try to answer.
All right. Dan Kane, a member of the News and Observer investigative team. Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks.
Well, we turn now to a more broad look at the planned Atlantic Coast Pipeline, and it begins at fracking fields in West Virginia. Its underground route would take it through rural eastern North Carolina in the counties of Northampton, Halifax, Nash, Wilson, Johnston, Sampson, Cumberland, and then ending in Robeson County. Now, there's been some resistance to the pipeline in these counties, and Lindsay Gilpin is the founder and editor-in-chief of Southerly and a freelance journalist. She traveled along the pipeline's route and documented people's voices and how they feel about the pipeline going through their counties. Lindsay, welcome to the State of Things.
Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
Good to have you here. Let's talk about what you've found now in these counties in terms of the impact, because obviously the pipeline people and others around the state will tout the economic benefits of this. Are people talking about that?
Yeah, so I traveled a lot of the route from West Virginia to North Carolina in order to really give. It's very rare that you get a sense of how giant 600-mile pipeline is, right? Often because local reporters like Dan are reporting on sort of the minute-by-minute updates on these things. Mm. And so I started in West Virginia and moved on down the route to Robeson County and focused on a few places like the ones you mentioned in North Carolina. And so this project has been pitched as an economic silver bullet, basically, for particularly communities in Appalachia that are struggling from the decline of coal. So say we'll come in and 17,000 jobs is the number that Dominion and Duke say will be. That will happen from the pipeline. And what happens is that really most of the places along the route aren't getting those specialized jobs, welders, workers that come in from out of state, from right. those contracting companies. And, on top of that, you have the fact that there's just not building because of the stop and start progression of the pipeline. There's just not a ton of consistent economic, livelihood in these places from the pipeline. And then you have the environmental impacts, right? You're going through some of the most mountainous terrain in this side of the country. And then in eastern North Carolina, when I was in Halifax and Northampton counties and Robeson County, it was flooded a lot of the time. I did this trip, most of this trip, in November 2018, which is actually a month before the pipeline was halted because of a permit crossing under the Appalachian Trail. And so I was seeing sort of the pipe that was on like 40% grade mountains, right? And looked kind of like it was going to come down. And, it was very intense, and it was raining, it was flooding. And so that is what most people are concerned about. Aside from the fact that there are leaks, methane emissions, the compressor stations, there are three of those, one in Northampton County that could potentially blow up. That's what a lot of people are concerned about. And besides the fact that it could just leak or contaminate the water sources, soil, things like the air, things like that. And then there's also, there's environmental justice concerns in almost all of the places along the route because it's in rural Appalachia and rural eastern North Carolina. And, you know, two out of the three compressor stations are in predominantly Black communities. Mm. And most of the communities that are the pipeline would go through are low income and are struggling to find, you know, economic sustainability. So, you know, they're very sort of susceptible to the idea that a company like Dominion, who is already powerful in these places, right, can come in and say, we'll give you thousands and thousands of jobs. And what we're seeing is that's just not playing out. Even if the pipeline was under construction right now, that still wouldn't be necessarily the case.
And I do want to talk about the environmental justice aspect of this story, particularly as we look at the counties where it's going in North Carolina. But let's talk, too, about the fact that this is natural gas. And so one of the other ways that this is being promoted is, look, of all of the fossil fuels around, this is the cleanest. It helps us ease the transition between fossil fuels and renewable. So first of all, let's talk about the amount of energy that it would produce and then the argument that, look, natural gas is better than some of the other stuff we're using right now.
Right. So it would 1.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day would flow through the pipeline, according to Dominion. And that is enough to what we found power 5 million homes daily. The thing to remember about the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is Dominion and Duke are the majority owners of the pipeline. They're building it. They are also the customers of the pipeline. So that's sort of the case that they made, which is that our ratepayers in our customers in North Carolina and Virginia and West Virginia, or Virginia and North Carolina, need to have cheaper electricity, right? And the issue that a lot of people that I spoke to at least have raised is that you know, Dominion's own long-term plan shows that they overstated the amount of natural gas that would be they would use over the next several years. And Virginia regulators actually rejected their plan because of that overstatement. And, you know, Duke has been found to not particularly in relation to this, but has been found to overstate electricity demand as well. So, you know, some people are concerned that maybe the end goal is to export it. That's not proven, but a lot of folks have raised that concern because it is headed. They floated the idea of extending it into South Carolina, sort of towards the coast. And the other part with the natural gas is, you know, it's in, like I said, communities that are historically extractive communities that have relied on coal for a century and are sort of looking for a new economy. And the natural gas boom is obviously it's everywhere, but it's especially huge in West Virginia, where this pipeline starts.
Well, I want to listen to some voices now from a mini documentary that is about to be produced or released by Grist, and you're also the filmmaker in this, right, Lindsay?
One of the
filmmakers, Lindsay Gilpin, is with us, and you talked to a number of people along the way, and you mentioned this question of social justice, the fact that these are going into poor areas where, yeah, economic development always sounds good, but also these are the people who have borne the brunt of our sort of economic catastrophes in the past. Mm-hmm. And let's listen to Belinda Joyner and Gary Grant, who are featured in the mini documentary. To hear a little bit about what they had to say.
And they always say there's a poor frog that can't praise your own pond. Right now, I don't know any place I'd rather be than right here where I am. And if we have to fight, we have to fight, and sometime we're gonna win and sometime we're gonna lose, so.
You either become committed to it or you just say, to hell with it. We were successful in fighting off the corporate hog industry.
Tried to put a liquid fertilizer plant out here. We fought that off.
Northampton County, they voted out every county commissioner who voted to bring the coal ash landfill.
Gary Grant and him, Reverend Barbara, walked the pipeline.
Fighting corporate America is just difficult.
I'm thinking that we're going to stop it. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm hoping. That it's never too late. Even though some people look at it as a done deal, but it's not over until it's over. And that's what I'm hoping, that we can stop it, because like I say, why pay for something that we're not gonna benefit from and then put our lives in harm's way because somebody else wanna prosper.
Belinda Joyner and Gary Grant featured in a mini documentary on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline in northeastern North Carolina. And I'm speaking with one of the filmmakers, Lindsay Gilpin. So give us a sense of the organization. Obviously, people have ideas, but how well organized are people along the route?
Pretty organized, even though that it, you know, for the first few years, since 2015, really, it was sort of in isolation. You know, people were organizing in West Virginia, in Virginia, and North Carolina, and now it's been so long, first of all, and they've gotten connected, and so really working together to sort of figure out how to kind of fight back against the pipeline. But in Northampton County in particular, Belinda leads the Concerned Citizens of Northampton County, and that started several years ago, many years ago, when they were trying to fight off, like you heard just then, a liquid fertilizer plant. They've fought off a lot of hog farming permits in Halifax County and Northampton County. And then most recently, last year, they stopped a coal ash landfill from coming in their community because they were sort of going door to door, organizing folks to come to meetings. And they tried to sort of do the same with the pipeline. But it's proven harder, not only because it's just a huge, massive project, but also it's just, you know, individuals get money for easements that to let the pipeline come through. And so it's harder to sort of figure out how to band together.
And in Robeson County, which is a majority disproportionately Native American, mm-hmm. I should say, the Lumbee tribe received a payment, right?
Well, they were offered a payment by Dominion, mm-hmm. along with three other tribes, two in North Carolina and two in Virginia. And they said no, it was $1 million, but they had to stay silent and never say anything bad about the pipeline or talk about it or anything. So they, the Lumbee tribe rejected that permit, and they've been organizing also for years because, like I said, it's the terminus in Robeson County, and there's all kinds of natural gas construction in that area, specifically in indigenous communities in Robeson County. So that's a major issue that I think they're trying to take on.
Now, right now, the pipeline is paused because things are tied up in court. And I saw today, in fact, that 18 attorneys general, yeah. led by the West Virginia attorney general, although I believe West Virginia was the only state that has the pipeline going through it, represented in this amicus brief. The other states were far from this region. But the fact, so where are we? I guess my question is, where are we in the legal battle?
Yeah, it's a long, confusing road that we've traveled for since 2015. So the Supreme Court is currently reviewing a case. So the U.S. Forest Service granted a permit a few years ago for the ACP to go under the Appalachian Trail on Forest Service land. And the and a lower court, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, rejected that permit. And so that halted construction in December 2018. Dominion appealed that, and that got sent to the Supreme Court, which is actually pretty big that the Supreme Court is reviewing this, right? And so no matter what happens, the Supreme Court is going to hear oral arguments in February. And no matter what happens, the companies will still have to get new permits. They will still have to go through that process, not just for the Forest Service, but also Army Corps and U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So we're sort of in a waiting period of figuring out what the Supreme Court decides. And then there will also that it also hinges on whether the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, their approval is rescinded or stayed, depending on what they decide after that. So,
is there any way to guess if, let's say, the Supreme Court cleared the way, you know, given all of the other regulatory needs that this this pipeline would have to meet, you know, when it might be completed if it were all cleared?
So, Dominion says 2021, and they stood by that over the last few months, despite all these sort of regulatory hurdles. I talked to a lawyer at the Southern Environmental Law Center, and for this story, and he said that it's going to be an uphill battle for Dominion at this point, rather than sort of everyone on the ground at this point, because they're not only fighting eminent domain with particular landowners along the route who won't give up their land, but like I said, several federal agencies need to redo their permits. So it could be months or even years. The costs now have gone from $4.5 billion to $5 billion, all the way to $7.5 billion. So,
Lindsay Gilpin, the founder and editor-in-chief of Southerly, a freelance journalist as well. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Her documentary is a partnership between Southerly and Grist, and you can find a link to that at our website, stateofthings.org, and our thanks to Dan Kane at the NNO as well. Just ahead, Alan Gerganus, The Oral Tradition, makes it to print just in time for the holidays. Stay tuned.